Here's Andy Udman.
We're going to spend this hour talking about cell phone radiation, but I just want to make a connection between the story that you just heard on the 10 o'clock news and Pam Colleen, who is writing a book on this very subject of a hyper-sexualized society. But let me play you first the clip from the 10 o'clock news of Catherine McCutcheon detailing the story out of Toronto, and then we'll talk to Pam about the book she's writing on this very subject.
The international child sex abuse case that's been investigated for over 3 years. Hundreds of people arrested. Over 380 children have been saved to date. Toronto police are still holding a press conference at Toronto Police Headquarters. This is some of what we heard.
Of concern to the investigators was the number of people that had close contact with children. The arrests included 40 school teachers, 9 doctors and nurses, 32 people who volunteered with children, 6 law enforcement personnel, 9 pastors or priests, and 3 foster parents. An example of one of the search warrants that was conducted in Canada, a search warrant was executed at a retired school teacher's residence. He had over 350,000 images and over 9,000 videos of child sexual abuse. Some of these images were of children known to him, and he was also charged with sexually abusing a young child relative.
This investigation was worldwide, including police in the U.S., Canada, Australia, Mexico, South Africa.
So there it is. Details that are absolutely shocking. 40 school teachers, 9 doctors, 32 volunteers working with children, 6 law enforcement officers, 9 pastors, 3 foster parents. In other words, people from every area of society. Pam, people are hearing this story and they are just gasping, as they are on the Toronto Rob Ford story, but you're writing a book. You've been telling me, and we weren't.
Oh, I've been writing this book for a long time, and I've been watching this.
We weren't going to bring this up today, but because of the story, what's the book you're writing, and what is its theory?
Well, it's about the decline of human sexuality, essentially, and why we're seeing so much dysfunction in terms of human sexuality today. So, why are we seeing everything from higher birth defects in children, lower libido, erectile dysfunction? Why are we seeing so much sexual deviance? And there's a lot of different issues to bring up here. And I'm not speaking from a puritanical or prudish viewpoint, not at all. I'm just saying, you know, we're crossing the line in the sand here. And why is this really happening? And one of the reasons, of course, has to do with all of the access to rather disturbing pornography that you can obtain very easily online. A few years ago, Megan Walker invited from the women's shelter, you know, they invited a professor, I think, from the University of Texas, who's written a book about the effects of pornography, the dark side of pornography. And in this movie, in this documentary that he starred in, it starts off with a young man who basically at the very, very young age began watching pornography on the internet. And that's what he thought real sex was. And so when he got to college, he, walking around campus, would look at women and think that's all women were thinking of. And he had to go through some very intensive behavior modification in order to realize that what he was watching online, the sex that he was watching online, wasn't real. And that's not what is happening, you know, among healthy sexual couples and so on. So the messages we're getting from the internet in terms of human sexuality are basically guiding people in the wrong direction. And again, I'm not speaking from a puritanical or prudish level. I just think we're crossing the line in the sand. And then I look at human sexuality at a hormonal level. What is happening to our hormones to make it so that, why are we making such bad decisions? And that's, you know, this connection between the two. I don't think people, I don't know, it's a sensitive topic, Andy. I know I need to tackle it in a book because I talk to people about this every single day. Why are we behaving in such a way? And it's more than just the internet, though. There's other variables, and I think it's important that we bring them
up. Okay, so you say at the hormonal level that something is happening, which is driving people into this deviant sex. Pastors, teachers, doctors, law enforcement officers, we're hearing these stories
when
every day.
When people have a low libido, Andy, they have to keep raising the bar, raising the bar, raising the bar. So they're looking for extra stimulation all the time simply because their libido is so low.
Okay, but this is at a hormonal level? Is this something that's causing this, unlike in the past?
Well, we're not fueling our hormones with the correct nutrients. You know, the low-fat diet, low cholesterol, we need cholesterol to fuel our hormones. But the xenoestrogens out there in the environment, the estrogen, of course, is going to compete with testosterone, and that's going to have a negative impact on our hormones.
So there's a nutritional component to this deviance in society?
I believe so, yes. I believe so, yes. To me, it's just common sense, but it's such a sensitive topic, nobody's talking about it.
Okay, I'm not holding you back. You want to go further?
I mean, we have, it's a perfect storm, Andy. It's a perfect storm. I've been working on this book for years. I've been talking to people about this at a grassroots level for years. People agree with me on this, but we're not hearing about it from our universities. We're not hearing about it from, professionals out there. They just look at this kind of behavior and they're going to, yes, I mean, there's going to be consequences for these people.
Okay, so give it to me in 30 seconds. Why are we seeing this explosion of interest in children for sex?
Well, in deviant behavior in general.
And deviant behavior in general, as we saw at this news conference.
When people have a low libido, right, regular sex ain't going to matter for them. They're not going to get the thrill that they are looking for because their hormones, their brain, the effects of having a really, really powerful orgasm, they're going to be shunted. And so they have to keep raising the bar in terms of seeking out more and more sensationalized sexual experiences.
And there's a nutritionally deprived component to all
yes,
of this?
Yes, I agree. I believe that. And environmental toxins as well. I believe that it all works together to create this kind of tragic situation.
Translation, exactly what our parents said. We're all going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, but I think what my main message is, I think we have to return to healthy sexuality. And again, I'm not speaking from a puritanical or prudish angle. That is not going
to
solve anything.
But to get there, we need to
get healthy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to take a short break just to turn the page because we have a fascinating author. I'm so pleased that she's been able to join us because she's going to address this issue that I get asked about all the time and I don't have the answers, and that is cell phone radiation. She's written a book called Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family Should Your Kids Even Be Exposed to an iPad. We'll talk to Dr. Deborah Davis in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. 22 minutes after 10 o'clock, a friend said to me years ago, Andy, you drive down the 401 with your cell phone on the car seat between your legs. You know what that can do to the crown jewels? And I laughed. I thought it was a joke. Maybe it's not a joke. We have a very special guest this morning, Pam Colina. I want you to introduce her. We had her on briefly a couple of weeks ago, and we asked her if she could come back to join us for this hour. The book is called Disconnect. I'm going to ask you what this title means. Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. Pam.
Dr. Deborah Davis is joining us this morning, and she's the author of the book Disconnect and another book called The Secret History of the War on Cancer. She's also the president of the Environmental Health Trust, and she joined us, I believe, from California this morning.
Dr. Davis, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. Nice to talk to you again. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Well, what Wayne Gretzky is to hockey, what Mr. Goodrich is to car garages, you are to this topic. So we thank you for joining us. Tell us about the title of your book, Disconnect. What are you suggesting?
First of all, I'm suggesting that there's a profound disconnect between what science is telling us here, now, and today about the dangers of microwave radiation from cell phones and the way that people are using phones today in their homes with their children. I think there's a profound disconnect there. And I think that many of us could reclaim our private time and our private lives if we simply turned off and disconnected from these devices. We are now treating our life as though all of us have to be available 24/7 on an emergency basis, as though at any moment something terrible might happen. And we all have to be available right away.
There are the social implications of all of that, but I think you're more interested. And I want you to know, I actually went to Radio Shack, now the source or whatever the new name is. I'm still getting used to it. To ask them if I could, get rid of my Deck 6 phones and go with the traditional, not the rotary dial like Ryan has, but at least a phone that has a cord into the wall, so it avoids the whole issue of radiation. Am I a Neanderthal or am I on the cutting edge?
You are definitely on the cutting edge, and I want to say that the government of Israel officially recommends that people get landlines that are corded and wired rather than cordless cell phones. A cordless cell phone is like a mini cell phone tower in your home. And if you have one, please keep it far away from wherever you sleep or wherever your children play or sleep.
So if you were to make a list of the devices we have in our homes that we need to deal with when it comes to cell phone radiation, what would be right at the top of the list?
the top of the list of the things we need to get to deal with this issue would be a wired headset, like or to use a speakerphone.
Okay. I'd prefer to go the other way. What's at the top of the list of items we need to ditch?
Okay, fine. Ditch your cordless phone. Absolutely. Only use baby monitors, which are microwave radiating devices, if the child is sick or at some distance of a foot or several feet from the baby's head. Baby monitors are also two-way microwave radiating devices. Many people are not aware of that. In fact, the way that the whole issue has been marketed, the industry uses the word radio frequency energy to describe the emissions that come from a cell phone. In my book, Disconnect, I explain that, in fact, when the first microwave oven was invented, it was invented using radar, and it was called a radar range because people who use these ovens, namely women, weren't fond of the idea of cooking with radar. They changed the name from radar to microwave radiation, and that, as you know, proved to be a successful marketing device. Fast forward today to cell phones. Cell phones really are two-way microwave radiating radios. That's what they are. They send and receive signals from towers.
Doctor, I want to ask you, because we're coming down to the bottom of the hour, I don't want to be melodramatic, so don't be shocked by this, but it does set up the question. In about a half an hour, there will be a funeral in Orillia for a little boy named Matthew Knight. He is 2 years and 9 months old. He is my cousin. He's been battling cancer for just over 2 years. Like I say, his funeral is within the next hour, and everybody's asking why. Why all this cancer? Is there any connection between that? I'm looking at your book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. Is there any connection between possibly Matt Knight's funeral in the next hour and everything you're saying?
You know, Andy, I'm so sorry to hear of this. And the answer is there could very well be a connection, and it's extremely difficult to establish it in an individual case. But let me tell you that my colleagues have done the following research. They have shown that prenatal exposures to pregnant animals from cell phone radiation results in significant damage to their brains, livers, eyes, kidneys, and skin. And this has been done by several researchers. So obviously we know that when cancer arises in a young child, it typically comes from things that have happened during pregnancy or early in life. We are growing up now in a sea of radio frequency energy, microwave radiation. It has not been fully tested for its impact on the developing embryo or fetus. We know that there are exposures, and there are other cases that I have reports of unusual cancers developing in children at young ages when their mothers were exposed to microwave radiation.
So let me ask you this, just because we are already over time and we have to break. How urgent is this issue? How desperately do we need to understand that microwave radiation is real and it is killing some of us?
It is a global public health crisis that we face today, that we are living in a sea of radio frequency energy and radiation that has not been fully evaluated for its long-term effects on public health. And there are prudent things you can do right now. Anybody listening to this program, get that phone out of your pocket. Put it on your desk, put it on the seat of the car, turn it off if you can, and stop holding it directly next to your brain and body, because as we talked about before, all smartphones today come with warnings that you should keep the phone some distance away from the body, and those warnings are a minimum of what is needed.
Doctor, hold that thought. We have to take a short break. We can't wait to get back with you, Dr. Deborah Davis. The book is called Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Back with Dr. Davis in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
This is a man who smokes Marlboro cigarettes. What kind of a man is he?
I'm a guy who likes to work on my car. I like to take it apart and put it back together. I get to working on it and forget where I am, what time it is. I even forget to eat.
You don't forget to smoke, though.
I always smoke when I work. They go together.
Why Marlboro?
Well, it's a combination of things. When I draw on a cigarette, I want to taste something. With Marlboro, I do. yet it's got a filter that works. Then there's this flip-top box. I like things that are well-designed. This box is interesting and practical. Would you recommend Marlboro to your friends? I already have. New Marlboro. Filter, flavor, flip-top box. Popular filter price.
Just so you know, folks, that was not one of our regularly scheduled commercials. Isn't that a shocker? You know, Pam, you and I were talking about tobacco science, the way cigarettes were marketed when I was a kid. I remember commercials like that. The Marlboro man up on his horse with a big mustache. Everybody smokes. At my sister's wedding in a church in Strathroy in 1963... my family handed out a package of cigarettes to every boy over 16 years old. Forget the gender issue. It's the way tobacco was marketed. Why are we talking about the way?
Right, because they also mastered the art of buying celebrities to market the product and also buying scientists and even medical doctors to be behind a certain product.
So how does that relate to what we're talking about today?
So the tobacco industry essentially was the blueprint for the marketing that is being used today to sell us things that we don't need or to sell us things that are dangerous for us. And so we see an absolute spillover effect go on. And of course, the master behind this marketing campaign in the cigarette industry was a marketer by the name of Edward Bernays. And he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And so he was the one back in the 1930s who came up with a lot of the schemes to promote the tobacco industry.
What does that have to do with cell phone radiation?
Very similar. We're seeing basically what I call cigarette science behind the wireless radiation. So they're basically just saying, put it out there and just see if we can survive it, you know, see if it's healthy or not.
Folks, if you have just joined us, we're having a fascinating conversation, Pam Killeen and Andy Udman, along with our guest this morning, Dr. Deborah Davis, who's written the book, Disconnect, the Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, while the industry is, what the industry is doing to hide it and how to protect your family. So again, especially for those who have just joined us, Dr. Davis, if you do us a little favor, what are the top, let's say, five or six technological devices we have in our lives that may be, in years to come, proven to be a major source of health chaos?
Well, I think we have to start with cell phones, which are being given to children today as pacifiers, and there are thousands of apps for infants and toddlers that are just preposterous. I want to bring your attention to the important work that Rafi Kavukian has been doing. Rafi, the famous children's singer, has written a book, Light Web, Dark Web, in which he says that we need to reform social media before they reform us. And he's calling attention to the fact that we are exposing children to iPads and laptops and cell phones in ways that have never been tested and may be affecting the development of their ability to think about other people. And in addition, by the way, given your last story about pornography, these devices make it easier to create pornography with children and to disseminate it. It turns out that 90% of all users of the internet, 90% of all use is actually used by 10% of all people, and the 10% who use 90% use it mostly for game and porn. So porn becomes the thing that fills and clogs the internet. That's why we can't get our calls. But as to the dangerous devices that you asked about, cordless phones, cell phones themselves, the laptops are no longer called laptops, you may notice, because in fact they're tested to be used at a distance of 20 centimeters, about 8 inches from the body. So there are the idea that we are using these things in close proximity and that pregnant women are holding them over their abdomens is completely nonsensical. Just to go back to your opening play of the Marlboro Man commercial, let me tell you that there was an expose of the fact that the Marlboro Man, many of them, died of lung cancer. And the film was for years not visible because Philip Morris sued the filmmakers and there was a settlement to suppress all the copies. But in 1983, Professor Stan Glantz at the University of California, San Francisco, where I am now talking to you, released the film through public television, and since then it's been shown around the world, and people understand that that was, as Pam has just said, a phenomenally successful public advertising campaign to manipulate public opinion to thinking that smoking was a manly thing that was a good idea and it was good for your health. You, literally, in that piece you played, the guy said, "I don't eat, but I have to smoke."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was
Go ahead.
Well, the torches of freedom. Remember the torches of freedom that they used to hook women into smoking? You remember that?
Oh, yes. And actually, the interesting thing about the smoking campaign was it was originally, it was to replace a campaign where they said that tobacco was mild as May, which was an idea to get women to smoke more. And they had these lovely fashion models walking down Fifth Avenue holding long cigarette holders. So then they decided that smoking had become too feminine because they were marketing women's cigarettes. So they decided that the way to get around that was to get a Marlboro man. And they got a couple of these carpenters and cowboys and tough-looking macho guys. And the cowboy ones, many of them ultimately ended up dying of lung cancer.
Okay, I want to bring your cancer book because you're also the author of the book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. I just want to read a very short paragraph in the foreword and then ask you to comment. We are talking, folks, to Dr. Deborah Davis, the author of another book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. Listen to this, and I say this in the context of my two-year-old cousin, whose funeral will start in a few moments. For much of its history, the cancer war has been fighting the wrong battles with the wrong weapons against the wrong enemies. The campaign has targeted the disease and left off the table the things that cause it: tobacco, alcohol, the workplace, and other environmental hazards. Conceived in explicitly military terms, the effort has focused on defeating an enemy by detecting, treating, and curing disease. Overlooked and suppressed was any consideration of how the world in which we live and work affects whether we get cancer. The result is appalling. Over 10 million preventable cancer deaths over the past 30 years. This has been no accident. Dr. Davis, your comment.
Well, in fact, let me just say that oncologists today are doing a fabulous job of finding new ways to treat cancer. And in fact, they often are successful for childhood cancers, despite the tragedy of Matthew Knight. Having said that, the fact is the cancer business is hugely invested in finding and treating ways to detect and treat the disease. And it's a multi-billion-dollar business around the world today. The war on cancer was officially launched by President Nixon in the United States in the 1970s. And at that time, we knew that tobacco caused cancer because the U.S. Surgeon General had declared that in 1964. Despite that fact, despite the fact that we also knew at that time that benzene and asbestos caused cancer, the war basically focused only on finding and treating the disease. And it's that relatively narrow focus which is why I say we have been fighting the wrong war with the wrong weapons. For example, we know there are environmental causes of breast cancer. We know that breast cancer right now is increasing in younger women, not older women. We did identify hormone replacement therapy as a cause of breast cancer, although for years it was pushed on women in the idea that there was something wrong with growing older and you needed hormones so that you'd look forever feminine. But for young women today, we do not know why more of them are getting breast cancer. One of the factors could certainly be something Pam talked about earlier. Endocrine-disrupting chemicals not only can alter sexual feelings and development in children and adults, but they can also increase the total amount of hormones a young woman is exposed to prior to puberty and early in life. And these endocrine-disrupting chemicals, which are in our food, in plastics, and things of that sort today, have the capacity to accelerate breast cell growth in the laboratory and have been identified as possible environmental causes of breast cancer. And yet we have not done a good job of controlling them. We've controlled almost no environmental chemical for its potential to disrupt hormones or to cause a cancer.
Doctor, I just want to ask you in a moment this question. I want to go to Josie because Josie is waiting, but I want to ask you this question. Young women in particular wear their smartphones and cell phones now 24 hours a day, and they keep them, some of them, in their bras. Is there any early evidence of a link between this microwave radiation and direct health effects on these young girls? Think about that. Josie, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question. Are portable cordless phones and battery-operated portable radios, are they equally dangerous?
It depends what they're using. A battery-operated portable radio is probably not using microwave radiation at all. A cordless phone has a base station, and so it is. Andy, let me respond to your question about breast cancer. Sadly, we are seeing some very unusual cases. There's been a report by Dr. John West and colleagues in Southern California of 4 cases of young women with very unusual breast cancer. Let me explain. Typically, breast cancer occurs in older women, and it typically occurs in the upper outer quadrant, a little bit toward the armpit. These young women all had multiple tumors in the center of their chest where they had stored their cell phone in their bras for between 7 to 10 years. And the tumors were just subcutaneous, under the skin, very unusually located exactly where the antennas of the cell phones were located. This strongly suggests to the doctors who wrote this published report that cell phones kept in the bra can be a cause of unusual breast cancer in young women. And we want to urge young women to never keep a cell phone on in your bra, because even though you're not using your phone, if you have it under your pillow, if you have it under your bra, your phone is not asleep when you are. And it's constantly searching for a signal from the tower, sending microwave radiation to the tower and receiving it back again more than once a second, so long as it's turned on.
Doctor, we have to take a short break. When we come back in our final segment, I want to ask you this. Are the numbers, is the science of cancer starting to reflect what you're saying about cell phone radiation, or are we still, as a society, in total denial? We'll be back with Dr. Deborah Davis in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Cancer in a young woman's chest, right where she keeps her cell phone in her bra. Pam, this is scary stuff. You have a question for Dr. Davis.
Right. I want to get Dr. Davis's views about what's happened to science today and how we can return to integrity in science. You know, a lot of people are calling what's happening with science today, you know, the prostitution in science or the corruption in science. I think a lot of people hold a lot of credence in science today, but I think what they don't realize is that a lot of the science we're hearing today is used for marketing purposes only.
Unfortunately, as Pam, as you have commented excellently and throughout your work on radio and the writing that you're doing, science has become a form of public relations that has been used by industry very effectively. Let me be clear. A lot of scientists don't even know they are being manipulated. For example, the tobacco industry created the Clean Indoor Air Research Group. They had no idea that they were being given money to do research projects intended to show that there were other sources of air pollution besides tobacco that were a problem. So science is being used now in order to confuse people, to magnify doubt in the public mind, because if people are confused, then they will think that we don't know what to do. And so the generation of doubt, as David Michaels has written, is really one of the main products of public relations today. What we need to solve this problem is something fairly straightforward that I've recommended and testified to Congress about in the United States. We need to put simple fees on products that rely on toxic materials, all of them. A simple fee that goes into a national fund to create independent funding for research. Right now, around the world, at universities in Canada, the United States, all over the world, major direct funding and direct hiring is taking place with industry money. Now, I have many colleagues in industry that I respect that are doing important work, but there really needs to be a complete firewall between them and the science that they produce and support. And without that, we get science for hire. We get hired guns. We get people who collect millions of dollars to do studies that find nothing. We get studies that are inconclusive by design because they've been set up to show that there are no risks.
Doctor, because we're approaching the end of the hour, we have looked at, you have three particular branches on this tree in the title of your book. Disconnect, the truth about cell phone radiation, we've looked at that. We just looked at what the industry is doing to hide it. Now let's look, if we could, at the third part of the title of your book, how to protect your family.
Definitely. You can go to our website, which I'm sure you'll be linking to from yours, and find information and safety tips under our downloads. Our website is ehtrust.org or environmentalhealthtrust.org. And that provides safety tips, simple things that doctors are advising patients to do now, like the American Academy of Pediatrics that says children should have no more than 2 hours of screen time a day in total. That does not mean you want children to have 2 hours a day. In fact, I recommend no screen time at all, as does the American Academy of Pediatrics for children under the age of two. In addition, you need to use a headset or speakerphone with your cell phones. You need to never keep a laptop on your lap, as in fact it comes with advice that says that. You need to unplug and disconnect at night in order to give yourself and your brain a rest. Never sleep with your phone or keep it on your body. If you go to your iPhone, as we did in the last time I talked with you, and you go to your settings, general, about, legal, and then RF exposure, inside the phone, it tells you to keep the phone at least 10 millimeters from the body. I would actually say much more distance is appropriate. The reason it says that is because phones are never tested as they have been used. They're not tested directly in the pocket or on the body, because if they were, the radiation would exceed the current standard. And I would add, distance is your friend. So whenever you're using a wireless device, just be smart about it.
Okay.
And whenever you can, use wired instead of wireless whenever you can. Schools today in Canada are going to wireless in a way that is not good for the children or the teachers in those schools. They should be using wired technology, downloading information, and not having children in a sea of radio frequency radiation that has never existed in human history.
Doctor, after our last chat, just before we wrap it up here, I asked around to see if you could get an iPad that's wired. You can't, but technically it's not a problem.
I would say that if you download things to the iPad and disconnect it from the internet and keep it off the body, it can be used. It would be much better if all of these tablets were wired, however. It would be much better, it would be much safer, it would be much smarter, and it would be more secure from hacking, because things can get hacked when they're wireless, and they slow down.
And I know you're not saying that, you're not anti-technology, you just want to see safe technology out there. Frank Clegg from the Citizens for Safe Technology here in Canada, I gather he just had a recent victory with the Toronto Board of Health in terms of lowering the ceiling of wireless radiation coming out of cell towers. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Yes, I'm very, very pleased that Mr. Clegg has been able to do this work with the citizens who are quite engaged in this activity. They've got a group of people who are very committed to this issue, and they were very effective because, unfortunately, the Toronto Public Health Officer had recommended that they could loosen their standards. But I'm especially proud of my colleague, Professor Anthony B. Miller, who is one of the most distinguished epidemiologists in the world and one a national treasure for Canada, who spoke to the Public Health Commission and said, this is not a good idea. There are no grounds for weakening our standards and allowing more wireless exposure.
Dr. Davis, I don't want to, in this last minute of the program, sound like the bugler of the apocalypse, but sometimes that's what gets people's attention. What will happen, do you predict, if we continue as a society to pretty much ignore the message that you have just shared with us over the last 45 minutes?
If we do not control and reduce our current exposures to wireless radiation and assume that they are all safe, we face an untold toll of damage to the brains and bodies of the next generation that may not be reversible. We can fix this problem. Distance is your friend. Be sensible in how you use these devices and try to let children be children. One of the reasons for this horrid story that you just told about child pornography is that we are sexualizing children and they're growing up far too fast. Once you introduce your child to the internet, you have no control over them. Let's be sensible about how we use all of this technology.
Dr. Davis, you can't hear it, but I can. The applause from our audience for where your heart is, but also for where your head is. Dr. Deborah Davis, the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Where can we get the book, Pam?
It would be available at Amazon, I'm sure, and if you went down to Chapters, and if they don't have it, certainly request it. But there's more information at Dr. Davis's website, which is www.ehtrust.org.
Dr. Davis, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andy and Pam. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Terrific. Wow. What a message. What a message.
Very powerful.
Scary stuff.
Yeah, it's very scary. But when consumers have the correct information, Andy, they will do the right thing.
Pam Killeen, thank you so much.
Thank
Dr.
you, Andy.
Devra is the name. Devra, D-E-V-R-A, Davis. Okay, we're going to go back to our three breaking news stories. The